been the opposite of awesome, because you would be in jail forever.
Blue, she said, don't you think it's unfair that Hive Wings can use their weapons on us anytime they want, but we can't do anything to fight back?
No.
He looked around quickly, but none of the nearby dragons reacted as if they'd just heard treason. It was loud enough in the market, and they were moving so quickly between stalls that he could hope no one would overhear them.
The Hive Wings saved us, remember? Our tribe agreed to accept their queen. Besides, there's a reason why the universe gave them weapons and not us. That's why they're in charge.
But maybe, if we fought back, they wouldn't be in charge, she pointed out.
Luna!
He herded her into the tunnels that led to the other levels of the hive. His voice dropped to a whisper.
For the love of Silk, what's gotten into you today? I know Swordtail is full of crazy ideas, but please don't let him drag you into prison along with him.
Those are my ideas, she said crossly. He got them from me.
Well, then leave me out of it.
He covered his ears.
La, 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 everyone's a good hive citizen here.
His sister rolled her eyes. Oh, Blue. She hesitated, studying his face, and then shook her head, as though she hadn't found the answer she wanted there. All right, I'm sorry. She flexed her claws and looked down at her wrists. It's probably because of my silk coming in. It hurts a lot more than I expected it to. Her palms and wrists were glowing even brighter than before. Blue hadn't noticed in the well-lit market, but here in the dim tunnels, it was impossible to ignore. She seemed to have little balls of fire clustered under her scales, bubbles of molten orange and gold.
That doesn't look normal, he said anxiously. I've never seen anyone's silk glands do that before metamorphosis. Have you?
Swordtail and his sister Io had gotten their wings not too long ago. He remembered their palms glowing a little bit, but not like this. And they hadn't mentioned anything about it hurting.
Does metamorphosis hurt? Why wouldn't someone warn us about that?
I'm sure it's nothing, Luna said with a shrug. Everyone metamorphoses a little differently.
Should we take you to a doctor?
No way, she said. She swiped the box of honey drops out of his talons. I'm not spending my perfect last day getting prodded by some hive wing who thinks we're all weird and revolting. I'm totally fine. To the Mosaic Garden. Let's go. Luna darted away up the tunnel. Blue rubbed his own wrists worriedly and then followed her. He could see the glow from her scales reflecting off the tunnel walls.
Is she going to be all right? If everything has to change, could it at least be ordinary, predictable change? Spirit of Clear Sight, if you're listening, please take care of my sister. Please let her metamorphosis be normal. And if you have time, please could you also make sure she's not arrested for treason? That would be great. Thanks.
Chapter 3. The Mosaic Garden glimmered in droplets of amber and gold, cobalt and jade, obsidian and pearl. Fragments of dragons prowled along the walkways under Claw and coiled around the columns. In the pavilions, claws and teeth roared across the ceilings, ancient battles captured in bits of glass forever. Here at the top of the hive, the sky was allowed to run free. It was the only space where hive wings could look up and see no roof, unless they wanted to climb to the top layers of the webs, which hive wings never did, or venture into the dry savanna below. Across the garden, sunlight drenched the grassy slopes and hedgerows, soaking into the obedient faces of the flowers that marched rose, carnation, marigold, violet, in orderly lines beside the path. The scents were heavy and warm, like the drowsy, buzzing insects that browsed the floral options. The path itself seemed winding and random, branching and wandering back, but it eventually spiraled everyone into the central feature, the Salvation Wall. This morning the garden was busy with dragons, but Blue and Luna found a spot on the grassy slope where they could sprawl with a view of the Salvation Mosaic.
"I'm not sure why you like this scene so much," Blue said, as Luna passed him his honey drop. "It has a few too many dead silk wings in it for me."
His wing buds twitched, and he glanced around, double-checking that there were no hive wings in earshot. He didn't think it was treason to criticize the Salvation Mosaic, but it certainly might be. "But even more dead leaf wings," Luna pointed out. "Isn't that reassuring?" Blue didn't argue with her, but he'd always found the mosaic sad instead of triumphant. He knew it showed the end of the war, so it made sense that there were dead dragons in it. It should make him glad that these were supposed to be the last dragons ever killed in the war with the leaf wings. He also knew they should all be grateful to the hive wings for saving the silk wings from the vicious green tribe. But it just made him wonder why there had to be a war at all. Why didn't the leaf wings give up and go away, or agree to be ruled by Queen Wasp? Why did they fight so hard instead? They must have known they couldn't win. There were so many more hive wings. And of course there was the book, which was guaranteed to guide the hive wings to victory. So why did the leaf wings bother fighting, knowing so many dragons would die for no good reason? It was their own fault their tribe was wiped out, if Luna was right, and they were really gone. Queen Sequoia should have given up her throne and accepted Queen Wasp's protection, like Queen Monarch did. Then the leaf wings could have lived alongside the silk wings, all three tribes under one queen, working together. Maybe Queen Wasp would have left them some trees to live in, between the hives. So what made them fight instead of accepting that? Had their queen really thought her tribe had any chance of winning? Blue studied the blocky dark green shape that was meant to be the queen of the leaf wings. It was so hard to imagine being Queen Sequoia, leading an entire tribe into a doomed war. He didn't even like arguing with other dragons. If someone offered Blue peace and stability, and all he had to give up was a little independence, he would say yes in a heartbeat.
"I hope I get to see it one day," Luna said, licking honey off her claws.
"What?"
he said, startled out of his reverie. She pointed at the mosaic, at the central yellow and black striped figure holding a rectangular shape over her head, the only object in the mosaic made entirely of gold tiles, so it caught the sun like a fragment of fire.
"The Book of Clear Sight," Luna said softly. "Don't you ever wonder what it says? What the next big disaster will be, or what's going to happen to all of us next?"
"Of course," Blue said. "But nobody gets to read it except the Queen and the Librarian."
"I could see it, though," Luna said. "From a distance, if I get to visit the temple one day."
"Well, Wasp Hive's not that far away," Blue said. "It'll be easy to visit the Temple of Clear Sight once you have wings."
"If you're assigned a job with travel permission and time off," he thought, but didn't say out loud. Luna had enough to worry about.
He stole a glance at her wrists, which she kept rubbing and then resting in the cool grass. Would the quiet lavender scales on his arms glow like that in 6 days? Was metamorphosis really more painful than anyone had warned them? He'd expected his wings to hurt a little as they came in, but he hadn't even thought to worry about his silk. They heard the chatter of approaching dragonettes, enough voices that it was probably a field trip from one of the fancy hive wing schools. Blue scooped up the empty Sugar Dream box, and they retreated to a less crowded section of the garden, where they played hide-and-seek until the sun reached its highest point
and began to slant back down the sky. They ate lunch at Luna's favorite cafe, and then wandered through the Lady Cicada Art Gallery on one of the lower floors of the Hive. Blue found all the different portraits of Lady Cicada a little intense, but Luna liked the tapestry rooms. Weavings were the one kind of art that was left entirely to silkwings. A hive wing could probably buy dyed silk threads from one of the market stalls, and a loom, like the ones silkwing dragonettes used for practice. But none of them would bother with learning to make a low silkwing art, which Blue thought was a bit silly. They certainly didn't mind buying the results and hanging them all over their walls. He left Luna gazing at her favorite tapestry, the one where Lady Cicada is flying with a long trail of radiant silk wings behind her in the sky, while he checked out the sculpture rooms. Lady Cicada was old enough to have been alive when there were still trees to spare, so there was one small wooden carving of her in the middle of the clay and metal and marble statues. The wood was a shade of brown close to her actual red color, and Blue liked to look at it and wonder about the artist. What did wood carvers do when there were no more trees to carve? Did they still get to make art? And did they have to learn all new techniques? Or did the queen give them new jobs? Did they ever wish all the trees weren't gone? "Let's get to the cocoon," Luna said, appearing behind him. Her pale green scales looked white in the dim light of the gallery, and it was hard to see the gold flecks along her back and tail. Her wing buds were definitely more unfurled than they had been this morning, though, and her wrists were glowing as brightly as the lamps. "We have a little more time," Blue said, seized with a sudden panic. "We could get another honey drop, or..."
"No," Luna said. Her expression was strange, as though she was already drifting into the metamorphosis trance. "I think I need to get to the cocoon as quick as we can."
"All right," Blue said. Should he have made her see a doctor after all? But someone at the cocoon would know what to do if there was anything wrong, surely.
They hurried to the outer spiral and down, down, level after level getting darker as they descended in strange silence. For Luna, Blue couldn't remember a time when she'd stopped talking for this long. Blue wasn't sure if he was imagining that the hum seemed louder down here, as if the insects outside were closer to the hive, busily swarming around it. The cocoon wasn't on quite the lowest ground floor level of the hive, but it was close to it. Here the streets were dimmer and emptier, the lamps fewer and farther between. A few lower-class hive wings lived down here, in the small cells near the outer spiral. There was one hulking building that Blue thought might be a training center for guards. The courtyard around it was open for a few levels up, to give them space to fly their exercises. Blue glanced up as they went by, watching the dragons moving around the streets above them. Occasionally a flutter of black and red wings broke the quiet, as a hive wing flew from one side of the hive to the other, to save walking time. But the main thing on this level was the cocoon. A long oval dome, two levels tall, which was swathed in so many beautiful weavings, it almost seemed to be made out of silk itself. Every silkwing in Cicada Hive came here for his or her metamorphosis, and according to tradition, afterward, each one made a silk weaving for the dome as an offering of thanks. Some of the weavings, especially the older ones, were simple, shimmery silver-gray silk in the shape of cobwebs or sunbursts or clouds. Other dragons had used dyes to add brilliant colors. Here, a silver dragon spangled with emerald green wings and matching green eyes all around her. Here, a swarm of tiny orange butterflies. Someone had even been able to afford two colors, weaving a midnight black shape of a hive behind an iridescent blue web. There were no trees, of course. It was forbidden to include trees in art, ever since the leaf wings had been driven out.
Even the hive's shape was dangerously close to that of a tree, and Blue wondered if the weaver had been worried about that. But for the first time, maybe because anxiety was sharpening his attention, Blue noticed something on one of the tapestries that looked like a leaf. No, wait. Was it a teardrop? A single autumn red shape, somewhere between a leaf and a teardrop, and no bigger than his claw tip, gleamed in the middle of the butterfly swarm. Was he seeing that right? Why spend the money on a second dye color and only use it in such a small way? Wait. There was another one. He blinked, startled. This one was slightly darker red, hidden against the black backdrop of the hive weaving. His eyes scanned the dome. There was another, veiled among a spray of escaping diamonds from a waterfall. Blue wrinkled his snout, puzzled. Now that he was looking, there were little red leaf drops hidden in half the weavings he could see. Why had so many silkwings decided to include that shape and that color? If it meant something, why didn't he know about it? Blue realized that Luna was staring up at the dome weavings too, opening and closing her talons nervously. He thought about asking her if she'd noticed the hidden red shapes. But it wasn't worth it to start a conversation that might stress her out. What she needed was distraction and calming down.
"What's your weaving going to look like?" he asked. "Have you decided?"
She'd been talking about nothing else for weeks, so Blue had heard all her ideas. But he was mostly trying to get her to smile, or blink, or do anything to reassure him that his bubbly sister was still in there. Luna winced. "I don't know," she said. "I have to get through this first."
"You'll be fine," Blue said,
taking her front talons in his.
"I've never heard of anything going wrong during a metamorphosis. I'm sure what you're feeling is totally normal. All of this is normal. It's going to be all right. Everything is always all right in the end, you know? You're going to wake up with awesome wings and cool silk and fly everywhere and be the greatest spinner in the history of the hives."
Luna closed her eyes and whispered, "Everything is always all right," as though he'd just said, "The sun is always shining," or, "The bees would absolutely love for you to take all their honey," instead. Blue was relieved to see a cluster of dragons gathered near the low, arched entrance of the cocoon. Maybe one of them could get through to Luna.
"Look how popular you are," he joked.
But his smile faded as they got closer and he realized that most of the gathered dragons were hive-wing guards.
"Why are there so many guards?"
He was sure that normally there were only two. He remembered the two extremely bored-looking guards who had fallen asleep by the exit during Swordtail's metamorphosis while he and Luna called encouraging words to their friend. But today there were at least five outside. And they all looked anything but bored. Black and yellow and red scales shifted and caught the dim lamplight as the hive wings scowled and stamped their feet. Two of them carried weapons, but the other three looked menacing enough without them. Most likely they had venom in their claws, or shot poisonous darts from their tails, or something along those lines. Blue shot a worried look at Luna.
"First Silverspot, and Luna's weird glowing scales. Now all these guards. What does everyone know that we don't?"
Chapter 4 Blue had to keep Luna calm. Whatever was going on, he didn't want her to go into her metamorphosis feeling scared or anxious.
"Why are there so many guards today?" Luna whispered to Blue. "Weren't there only two at Swordtail's metamorphosis?"
"Oh, I don't remember," he said brightly. "I'm sure there are always this many, and we just never noticed them."
"Hmm," she said doubtfully.
"Luna!"
Swordtail cried,
emerging from the group and bounding toward them. His scales were dark blue, with a small pattern of white triangles along his spine and snout, and then dappled all over with orange splotches, as though someone had melted a sunset in a cauldron and flung it at his wings. Blue always thought of his friend as one of the shiniest silk wings around, bright and gleaming, the way Sortel had been when they first met on the school racetrack 5 years ago. But lately Sortel was always covered in dirt, with splinters of tree stuff caught between his claws and tangled in his long, elegant horns. And all too often he wore this expression, this worried, grim look that was really the last thing Luna needed today.
"Happy Metamorphosis Day!"
Blue said to him, perhaps a little too loud. He widened his eyes significantly at Swordtail.
"Isn't this exciting?"
"Are you all right?"
Swordtail asked, gathering Luna into his wings. She leaned into him, as though she'd been flying for days, and he was the island she'd been searching for. He took one of her front talons in his, and soft gray silk spun out from his wrists, gently wrapping around hers to wind them together.
"I can't believe you're here," Luna said. "I thought Grasshopper would never let you come."
Swordtail made a face.
"He didn't. I finished all my work and asked, yes, very politely, Blue, I promise, and he still said no."
He shrugged.
"So I snuck off when he wasn't looking."
Blue's idea of politely tended to be quite different from Swordtail's. But Blue had met Swordtail's boss once, and was not at all surprised that Grasshopper had tried to keep Swordtail from attending Luna's metamorphosis. Silverspot's mistress would do it out of spite. Grasshopper most likely said no, because he was still trying to teach Swordtail obedience and good behavior.
"If Swordtail would quit picking fights with Hivewings and expressing unpopular opinions all over the place," Blue thought, "perhaps figures of authority would be a little less annoyed with him, and his life would be a little bit easier."
"Oh, Swordtail," he said ruefully, "you're going to be in so much trouble."
"Doesn't matter. This is more important."
Swordtail turned Luna's palms up and frowned at the glowing embers under her scales.
"Whoa.
Does it look weird to you?"
Luna said anxiously.
"Of course not," Blue said. "You're totally fine."
"I remember a little bit of light where my silk came in, but not this bright,"
Swordtail said, completely trampling over Blue's efforts to calm Luna down.
I'm not sure this is normal. Io, have you seen anything like this before?"
He turned to his sister as she came up to join them. Directly behind her was Blue's mother, Burnett, who stepped around the others to give Blue and Luna quick hugs.
"No,"
Io said, sounding even more alarmed than he did. Her wings had come in several months ago, huge and dark purple with shimmers of aquamarine green. She was only a year older than them, but she had long, aristocratic-looking bones and horns, and she towered over Luna.
"You don't think..."
They both glanced at Burnett for some reason, but she wouldn't meet their eyes.
"Oh," she said carelessly, "I've been to so many of these, and there's always something surprising. Never anything serious, though. Nothing to worry about."
Blue had never heard his mother lie in his own stretched, "Everything is fine here," voice. It made him feel as if his nice, normal world was as thin as paper and as easy to stab holes in.
"Are you Luna?"
one of the hive wing guards said roughly, slithering up to them. He muscled Swordtail aside, breaking the slender threads that bound him and Luna together.
"You're late. Time to get inside."
"Sorry," Luna said, which was what she was supposed to say, and yet so unlike Luna to actually say it that Blue shivered.
The ground felt unsteady below him. Also, they were not late, not even by a heartbeat. All hive wings and silk wings had a precise internal clock that always kept their days on schedule and warned them when the rainy season was coming.
Blues told him they were right on time. But of course, he wasn't about to argue with the guard.
I love you, Luna,
Swordtail said fiercely.
We do too, said Burnett, and Blue nodded, although his sister wasn't looking at them and didn't seem to hear them either.
You lot, up to the balcony, if you must stay,
the guard said, waving one of his crimson and black dappled wings at the side entrance. He gave Luna a small shove in the direction of the archway, and she went, with only one last nervous glance back at them before she disappeared inside.
Should we do something?
Io asked Swordtail.
Tell someone?
There's no time, he said.
His long blue antennae unfurled, twitching, and he turned to stride toward the dome.
And it's probably not. I mean, it's so rare.
What? Blue asked.
Tell someone what? What are you so worried about?
Io, what's so rare?
Io looked as though she might be about to tell him, but...
Nothing,
Burnett said, putting one wing over Blue's shoulders.
Don't worry, sweetheart. Let's go cheer for Luna.
He let his mother steer him through the side entrance and up the stairs, their footsteps muffled on the ancient silver silk carpets. The gallery was a long, open balcony that ran around the entire dome, overlooking the dim, quiet floor below. The only light came from small candles floating in the central pool of water. Blue started toward their usual spot, on the far side of the dome, but Burnett gently tugged him back.
Let's stand here this time, she said, choosing a spot not far from the stairs.
Swordtail and Io joined them, the faint glow of candlelight rippling along their iridescent scales. Swordtail rested his front talons on the thick stone railing so he could lean over the edge, as though trying to get as close to Luna as he could. Blue wouldn't do that until he had wings. It wasn't far to fall, but it would still hurt if he did. All around them, silk wings were gathered in the shadows of the balcony. Friends and family to the three other dragonettes undergoing metamorphosis today. Blue recognized many of their faces, lit from below like eerie moons all around the dome. Most of them were whispering to one another, but a hush fell as Luna was escorted onto the floor. Like the others, her wristband had been cut off by the guards. Now, in the twilight room next to the other dragons, and with her scales more visible, it was terrifyingly clear that something different was happening to Luna. Where the others had a pale, silvery light coming from their wrists, Luna seemed to have fireflies on fire, startling spots of molten gold. Blue felt Io grab Swordtail's arm, but he couldn't look away from his sister, all alone on the cocoon floor.
I'm the one who was with her all day. I should have noticed that something was wrong. I should have made her ask someone for help.
One Silkwing, a starved-looking turquoise dragonette from their class at school, had already entered her metamorphosis trance. Two long, seamless strands of moon-colored silk spiraled out of her wrists. Her eyes were closed, and her talons moved automatically, weaving the silk into a cocoon around her. As Luna glanced around nervously, a second dragonette drifted into his trance and lifted his talons, silk threads spinning out. His cocoon looked like the first dragonette's, like every Silkwing's. It would shelter him for 5 days and nights while his wings came in. Swordtail had promised Blue that he wouldn't remember a thing about the trance time. But Blue found that almost scarier. The idea that he'd be unconscious to the world for that long, and then he'd come out looking totally different.
Not totally different, Swordtail insisted. I still look like me, don't I?
Which he sort of did, except that the wings made him look quite a bit bigger and more dramatic. The third dragonette was eyeing Luna's wrists with concern and taking small, sidling steps away from her. Whispers were gusting through the watching silkwings.
like the sweeping winds that shook their webs before the storms of the rainy season. There were even more guards now, at least 7 of them, most standing unsettlingly close to Luna and pretending not to watch her, while their eyes darted constantly from her to the balcony, to the pool, to the others, and back to her. Luna held out her front talons, and the whole world seemed to hold its breath for a moment. Then suddenly, she let out a sharp cry, and silk began to spiral out of her wrists. But it wasn't normal gray silk. Luna's silk flared like threads of lava erupting from under her scales. It hissed as it hit the air, lighting up the room with sudden bright star brilliance. It was like the fire of the sun twisted into filaments that snaked back to clutch at Luna's talons, her legs, her whole body. "Oh, no," Io whispered. She looked at Swordtail, whose face was transfixed with horror. "Flame silk," he breathed. Chapter 5.
"What's flame silk?"
Blue asked frantically as the guards advanced toward his sister. He shook Swordtail with trembling talons.
"What's happening? What's wrong with Luna?"
The third dragonette down below bolted for the far side of the dome and tried to scramble up one of the side walls, away from the guards and the burning light. Luna shrieked with fear and leaped away from the fiery silk spilling out of her, but there was nowhere to go. It clung to her like a real cocoon would, winding around her talons and legs, even as she tried to claw it away.
"Is it burning her?"
Blue cried. He turned to Io, his voice high and desperate.
"Io, is she all right? What is flame silk?"
"It won't hurt her," his mother said. But her voice was as sad and soft as the splash of a silk-wrapped corpse slipping into the bay.
"Did you know?"
Io asked Burnett, fiercely over Blue's head.
"Silverspot and I suspected,"
Burnett answered.
"Their father didn't say anything, and you couldn't tell by looking at him. But he was watched so carefully and taken away so quickly, we knew there had to be something."
"You could have warned us,"
Io hissed.
"We could have hidden her."
Burnett shook her head. Luna let out another fainter cry, collapsing forward with her eyes closed. The flame silk spun on, and everywhere it touched her she went still, as though it was tranquilizing her.
"Everybody, please remain calm,"
one of the hive wings said smoothly, spreading his wings to address the horrified audience of silkwings.
"We are well prepared for silkwing diseases like this. Everything is under control."
"Diseases?"
Blue echoed in a choked whisper. Io scowled. His sister wouldn't be left to transform quietly on the floor of the cocoon, like the other two small silken bundles beside her. Already she was surrounded by all the guards, spears lifted, swords and claws and tail spikes all pointed at her, as though her flame silk cocoon might sprout fiery wings and try to escape. And a dark metal cart was rattling through the door, yawning mouth ready to swallow her up.
"Luna!"
Swordtail shouted, shaken out of his horror by the sight of the cart. He vaulted over the balcony railing and plummeted to the floor below, with barely enough time to spread his wings to break his fall. His legs were already moving as he landed, galloping across the floor toward the guards.
"What do we do?"
Blue asked Io and Burnett. Should they all jump down and try to save Luna? But there were so many guards. And maybe they were trying to help her. They did say they were prepared, so they'd seen this before. Maybe they could take her somewhere to cure her. Maybe they could fix her silk and make it normal.
"You run,"
Io said. She dragged Blue away from the railing and shoved him at the stairs.
"Me?"
Blue said, astonished.
"He can't escape,"
Burnett argued tiredly, following Io.
There's nowhere he can go. It would be safer for him to turn himself in.
No way, Io cried. We can't just let them take him.
Why would they take me?
Blue yelped in alarm. His talons scrabbled on the stone floor as Io pushed him forward again.
I didn't do anything. I'm not sick.
Neither is Luna, Io pointed out. She herded him along in front of her, talking fast as they stumbled down the steps. Flame silk is something you hatch with. She must have inherited it from your father, which means you have it too, which means they'll come for you next.
But why? He said.
One of his claws snagged painfully on the carpet. He paused to unhook it, looked back up the stairs, and saw his mother watching him go with a bleak expression. Watching, but not following. She'd already given up.
What are they going to do with Luna?
We don't know, Io said. We've never been able to find out. Flame silks are very rare, and the hive wings make them vanish immediately.
Vanish? Blue echoed.
Like, forever? His insides felt as if they'd all leaped off the top of the hive and were currently plummeting toward the distant ground.
Do you see why you have to run?
Io pushed open the door at the bottom of the stairs and looked out.
All clear. Quick, while they're busy with Luna and Swordtail.
Blue dug in his claws as she tried to throw him out the door.
Wait, wait, run where? He pleaded.
Anywhere, she said.
Run, hide, and don't let them find you.
But I'll get in trouble, he said. I can't hide from the hive wings. Mother's right. If they want me, I should turn myself in.
They won't hurt me.
His voice wavered, thinking of flame silks vanishing forever. Disappeared so thoroughly that he'd never even heard of them.
Maybe they can fix me so I won't have flame silk.
Io groaned softly.
Why did it have to be you? She said.
The one silkwing who thinks hive wings have any good in them.
Listen, Blue, stop trusting them right now. They've let you go about your ordinary life so far, but now you look dangerous to them, and they're not going to let you have that life back. It's gone. But it doesn't have to be, Blue protested. If I'm good, if I do what I'm told, I mean, I'm not dangerous. I could never be dangerous.
I know, Io said, rubbing the spot on her forehead between her horns. Unfortunately, I think that's true. She took his shoulders and shook him.
But they don't care. Please, promise me you'll hide from them, Blue. Don't let them catch you.
For how long? Blue said.
Where can I go? What about my metamorphosis? It's really soon, and then I'll have to come back here.
Io sighed. Let's hide you first, and then figure that out, she said. She shoved open the door, flung him outside, and bolted after him. Blue found himself running, even though his brain was shouting at him to go back, to ask the guards for help, to make sure Luna was all right. Was she still terrified? Or had the silk entranced her, taking her into peaceful darkness even as chaos swarmed outside her cocoon? What had the guards done to Swordtail? He could never fight so many. A silkwing didn't stand a chance against even one hivewing. Was he lying beside Luna on the sand now, bleeding and swollen with venom? Blue shuddered, his claws wobbling underneath him. They had just reached the edge of the outer courtyard when he heard shouts behind them.
Stop! You there! Silkwings! Stop at once!
His feet obeyed instinctively. Guards were talking to him. Guards were to be listened to. You never argued with hive-wing guards, or else you'd get sprayed or stabbed with something. Everyone knew that. But Io didn't stop. Io threw her talons around his chest and hurled up into the air, her spectacular wings pumping desperately.
Io!
Blue yelped with fear as his claws left the ground. Suddenly they were flying along the narrow streets, flashes of startled faces peering out of windows at them. The indigo whirl of Io's wings beat around Blue's head, and he covered his eyes.
Stop! Queen Wasp orders you to stop at once!
Where did Io think they were going? There was nowhere in the hives where Queen Wasp wouldn't find them. Nobody ran from the Queen's guards, and she would surely kill them both for disobeying her orders. Io let out a small roar of frustration, and Blue peeked through his claws. They were nearly at the exit that led to the tunnels spiraling up. The guards were closing rank in front of it, spears crossed, teeth gleaming.
That's the only exit, Blue thought frantically.
There weren't even any windows or ledges to the open sky on this level of the hive.
Oh, he realized, with a fresh burst of terror. That's probably intentional, so there's no way for a flame silk to escape.
Io whirled in the air and shot down one of the avenues toward the training center, which, frankly, seemed like a poorly thought-out plan. Blue could see a small army of eager-looking hive-wing trainees swarming out of the front gate. Yellow-striped wings flicked and buzzed. Sharp white teeth snapped at the air as the dragon spread out to search the streets.
For us. They're searching for us.
But then Io banked suddenly left and up. Up through the open courtyard toward the higher hive levels. Blue yelped again as the ground dropped even farther away, and then really wished he hadn't even thought the word dropped. Shouts of fury rose from below, followed by the sound of buzzing, beating wings as all the guards and soldiers took to the air.
We're going to die, Blue thought. There's so many of them, and they have... Wait, why aren't they shooting at us?
He knew some of the hive wings behind them had dart weapons and spears, so why hadn't they thrown them? Dragons on the surrounding levels rushed to the edge of the ledges to watch the chase. Blue had never had this many eyes on him before.
What do they see? What do they think? Does anyone want to help? Or are they all hoping we'll be caught and it'll be exciting to watch?
Suddenly, Io was jerked backward, and Blue felt himself slip through her talons for just a moment until she dug her claws in. Ouch! And gave a mighty heave of her wings, kicking backward at the hive wing who'd grabbed her tail. They struggled in the air, Blue dangling between them, and then Io swept her wings in a huge arc and threw Blue up toward the highest open level.
Yaha!
Blue screamed. He flung out his claws and felt them catch in the rough tree-stuff walls. His body slammed into the side with a bone-jarring thump, and he dug in his back talons desperately.
Up!
Io shouted to him as she swung her attacker like a club, smashing other hive wings away.
Climb, Blue! Go!
He tried to imagine he was out on the webs, having a perfectly normal climb with lots and lots and lots of secure webs below to catch him. He pushed himself up and up again, and in a moment, he felt the ledge above. He clutched at it, his wing buds churning as though they could help. Two faces peered down at him, silk wings, ones he didn't know, but he could guess what they were thinking.
Should we help this wingless dragonette? Will the hive wings punish us if we do? What has he done to make the guards chase him? He must be a very bad dragon to be running from the guards, but if we let him fall, he'll die.
Talons reached down and circled his wrists. Strong arms pulled him up to safety. He sprawled on the tree stuff, gasping more from fear than exhaustion. This was a residential level, full of hive wing homes, a bit smaller than the one where Silver Spot worked, and he'd landed in their school's practice vegetable garden. All around him were garden boxes full of dirt and little tendrils of, maybe one day I'll be a plant, labeled with optimistic scrawls on flat wooden sticks. The two silkwings, watching him with confusion, were the only dragons nearby. but he could see hive wings running toward him along the streets, and others spreading their wings on the far side of the city.
Io, he panted, scrambling up. Is she?
Are you all right? Asked the gray-blue silkwing, with speckles of yellow across her scales.
What?
Began the other, but he broke off as Io landed on the ledge behind Blue.
The seeds will grow again,
Io said to them. She shoved Blue forward without waiting for a response, but he saw a look of recognition cross their faces.
What?
He said to her, as they plunged down the nearest empty street. He glanced back and saw the silkwings, casually blocking the road behind them, their wings spread wide as they started arguing about something.
There are silkwings who will help you, Io said rapidly. If you can find them, a group called the Chrysalis.
The houses they ran past were narrow but elegant, made of tree stuff that flowed straight into the street below and into the roof above them, as though they had grown with the hive. Most of them had intricate patterns of seashells or glass tiles embedded in their outer walls, spirals of pearl-pink coral or zigzagging diamonds of aquamarine. Street lamps that hung from the ceiling above cast a warm glow over everything, deceptively calm and cozy, like a shroud of silk around a wasp nest.
The Chrysalis? What? Why don't I know about them?
Blue asked, breathing hard. He'd never run this much for this long in his life. His sides ached, and his talons hurt, and his eyes were blurry, and his heart felt like a beehive about to explode. Io snorted.
Because every time someone says to you, "Hey, wasn't that mean what that hive wing did?" you say, "Oh, maybe she's tired, or frustrated with work, or just lost something important, or is having a fight with her sister." And then it's kind of hard to follow up with, "Well, so care to join a movement to take her down?"
"A movement?" Blue sputtered.
"To take who down?"
The street abruptly ended, spilling them out into a hive wing park. Or at least, it looked a bit like a park, but without any grass or flowers. Instead, the vast circle was full of playground structures carved from real wood, dark and smooth, like the abandoned bones of ancient trees. Many of them arched all the way to the roof, which was probably a lot of fun if you were a dragonette with wings and a chance of surviving a fall from that height. A hive-wing school, shinier and much bigger than Silkworm Hall, loomed along one side of the park, and in the center of the circle was a pool of water lined with silver-bright mirror tiles. On the far side of the park, Blue caught a glimpse of slanting sunset light through one of the openings where dragons could fly in and out of the hive. Out that window were the savannah and the open sky. But how could they get there? The park was full of hive wings, dragonettes playing, parents gathering water from the pool, guards and families and teachers who'd finished school for the day, all strolling the paths, filling the space between here and escape. He'd wondered why the houses they ran past seemed to be empty. Apparently, this park was the place where the entire neighborhood gathered at the end of the day.
"Duck your head," Io said. "Pretend to be a servant. Walk quickly, but not too fast."
She folded her wings in close and darted out onto one of the more crowded pathways, weaving between dragons. With her head bowed submissively, she blended in with the other silkwing servants Blue could see here and there, many of them carrying heavy water jugs, or keeping an eye on young dragonettes, while hive-wing parents chatted with each other.
"This is never going to work,"
Blue thought, as he ducked his head and followed her. And yet, for a moment, it seemed as if it might. The hive-wings barely glanced at two more lowly silkwings. They were so busy with one another, it was as though the silkwings didn't exist. Many of them were watching a group of young dragonettes leap from a climbing structure, their tiny wings pumping to help them drift down. One little black and orange dragonette crashed into Blue as she ran across to her friends, but she just yelped, "Oops, sorry," and kept going. It looked like a nice place to live. Perhaps not as huge and impressive as the higher level where Silver Spot's mistress had her mansion, but a place where families were friends with one another. These dragons made one another laugh, worked hard, cared about their dragonettes. They were happy to be safe. They weren't so different from Blue and his family. Surely they wouldn't let him be dragged away by guards to... whatever happened to Flame Silks. Did they even know about Flame Silks? Behind him he heard clanking and running talon steps. He tried to duck his head even farther, following Io around a tall, fort-like playhouse where three hive-winged dragonettes passed pretend honey tea out the windows. The open air wasn't too far away now. In a moment, Io could swoop him off into the grassland. Hive wings didn't like going out too far into the savannah, so they should be able to find somewhere to hide out there. And then Io could explain everything to him, and they could figure out a safe way to make this right. They were passing behind a cluster of tiny dragonettes in a sandbox when the silence fell. It fell so suddenly, like a wall of nothingness, that Blue found himself pausing to touch his ears in bewilderment. Why did everyone stop talking? He glanced around uneasily. They hadn't just stopped talking. Every hive wing in sight was frozen, right in the middle of whatever they'd been doing. The dragonette halfway up the climbing structure had one claw raised. The twins in the sandbox were scowling at each other, mouths open, but no sound coming out. Io slowed to a stop in front of him, spreading her wings slightly to keep him back. Her gaze nervously darted around at the silent dragons. Blue realized that the other silkwings in the park were looking around too, many of them just as bewildered. And then the hive wings lifted their heads, all of them at once, and tilted their chins toward the east. Blue felt a scream building in his throat. All of their eyes had gone pure white. "Find the Flame Silk Dragonette," the hive wings said in unison. "Capture him, and bring him to me." Chapter 6. A shriek of terror ripped through the heavy air, but it wasn't coming from Blue. It came from near the pool, from a young silkwing with pale blue and pink wings, holding a baby hive wing in his arms. The tiny dragonette glared up at him with its fathomless eyes. "Aphid?" the silkwing cried. "What's wrong with you? Aphid, can you hear me?" Aphid bared small teeth and twisted his body fiercely, struggling to get free. "Let him go," said an older silkwing softly, touching the younger one's shoulder. "They're not themselves right now." The dragonette snapped at his caretaker's talons as the silkwing set him gently on the ground. "Where is the Flame Silk?" Aphid said, in spine-chilling unison with the other hive wings. "Who can see him?" The hive wings all slowly, eerily, began swiveling their heads, staring in turn at each silkwing in their line of sight, like snakes studying a herd for the weakest prey. "Io?" Blue whispered as softly as he could. "I think..." "Run," she whispered back. They bolted for the exit, Blue's legs screaming in protest. Every head snapped toward them. A black-spotted scarlet dragonette, no taller than Blue's wing buds, threw herself off a slide at them, hissing. She landed on Io's back and sank in her claws, but Io dove into a roll and knocked her off. Blue felt pinpricks of pain stab into his ankle. He glanced back as he ran and found an orange dragonette with his teeth embedded in Blue's back leg, too small to do much damage, but hanging on grimly.
How do I shake him off without hurting him? Blue thought frantically. There was no more time to think. Two much larger hive wings blocked their path, wings spread and claws gleaming.
Give up, wingless, they said. You cannot escape me.
Blue skidded to a stop, and the dragonette tumbled off his ankle. There were hive wings in every direction, all focused on him. The voice was right. There was no... Io barreled into the two dragons in front of them. Her wings flapped huge and purple in their faces, driving them back for a moment, clearing a path. And there was the sky. Blue darted to the opening and ran pell-mell toward the ledge. It was close now. He could see two of the three moons rising. He could see small, twisted trees and a distant giraffe and the long yellow grass waving far below. Too far below. He reached the edge and froze. The wall of the hive plunged down before him, impossibly steep, impossibly terrifying. This level was far below the webs, but still a long way from the ground. Blue couldn't possibly jump from here. He would break his neck and die.
If only I had my wings.
He turned and saw Io fighting off three full-grown hive wings. Their talons slashed at her side, and one had his tail raised to stab her with a stinger at the end.
Io! Blue cried.
Go, Blue! She shrieked. Get out of here!
I can't.
He felt tears finally start to flood his eyes.
I can't go without you.
In a way, he meant, I can't fly from here. I need your wings. But in another, deeper way, he really meant that he couldn't leave her at the mercy of these zombie dragons. He couldn't keep running, alone, knowing she would be caught and punished worse if he did escape.
You have to,
she shouted. But she must have realized he couldn't take that leap. As he took an indecisive step back toward her, she kicked a hive wing in the face and broke free for a moment, just long enough for her to grab a twisted ladder structure and knock it over between her and her attackers. In the breath that gave her, she shot a twist of silk from her wrists up at the ceiling and another that coiled around Blue's ankle. A heartbeat later, he was hurled toward the roof. His claws caught the webs that Io was shooting across the top of the cavern. Instinctively, he swung to the next one, and then the next. He jumped swiftly, like they'd learned to do in school during emergency drills. What if the web is falling? What if you have to get to a hive quickly for safety? What if you only have a few strands of silk to escape along? But those drills had been about the threat of leaf wings attacking the webs. They were practiced so that little wingless dragonettes would be ready to flee to a place where hive wings could protect them. Never once, despite his overactive imagination, had Blue ever imagined using these skills to run away from hive wings. He shot over the heads of the families on the playground, so fast that they lost track of him for a moment. As they whipped their heads around, buzzing and hissing, he reached the end of Io's silk, shielded by a tall slide near the walls of the school, and looked back. Io was almost at the ledge, and with the hive wings distracted, looking for him, she might be able to get out and fly away. But not with him. She'd only be able to escape without him. He gouged a chunk of tree stuff out of the ceiling above him and threw it as far and hard as he could. It landed with a scattering thud halfway across the playground, and all the hive wings spun toward the sound. Blue let go of Io's silk and dropped to the top of the school wall, then over it and down into the small courtyard beyond. Triangles of lime-colored chalk marked out the games young hive wings played here during recess. For a moment, Blue thought about grabbing one of the pale blue metal practice spears that leaned against the wall. But the truth was that he'd be more likely to hurt himself than anyone else with one of those, and he couldn't even begin to imagine stabbing another dragon on purpose.
Where do I go?
He glanced around the courtyard, trying to catch his breath. It was surrounded on all sides by the school, except for the wall behind him, which had the neighborhood park and a horde of white-eyed zombie dragons on the other side.